So we will recite our lecture verse to start. The unpassed, penetrating and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha. So today we're celebrating the Buddha's enlightenment. And as Rupa Masudashan said last week, officially Buddha celebrated on the 8th of December. And we did that. We had a whole retreat about it and so forth. But of course we don't really know when the Buddha was enlightened. December the 8th is just a day. So we also celebrated on the 25th of December because everybody else is celebrating something. All the religions seem to be celebrating something at this time of year. And today we're celebrating it, even though it's the 22nd of December, because it's Sunday. So in fact, we're celebrating it three times. It's okay. We can paddle it. We're thinking of the Buddha's enlightenment. There's all sorts of stories about it. And it seems that many of them were not actually in the Pali Canon. They were later embellishments. And the Buddha didn't talk about it that much. He talked about it a few times and in different ways. There's a lovely poem, The Light of Asia, by Sir Edwin Arnold, a really long one, which many of us have read and used to read bits of it at this time of year. It's really lovely. If you haven't read it, I strongly recommend it. It's inspiring, it's beautiful, and maybe some of it did happen. It's certainly full of lovely teaching. So, and we don't know. We weren't there, so we don't know. Maybe it was just like that. But I'm going to talk about Bhikkhu Nanamoli's version of the life of the Buddha, because he took it from the Pali Canon. And it's a lot more bald, a lot less pretty, in a sense, than the Light of Asia's version, or the, some of the other things that people talk about. So, to start with, I'd like to talk about the milk porridge thing. You know, the Buddha was striving desperately for enlightenment, doing all these ascetic practices, almost killed himself. And finally he thought, this is not working. I'm going to have something to eat and I'm going to just take a breath, you know. So somebody, a lady came and she happened to be coming with some milk porridge to give to a local tree deity. And there was the Buddha. She thought it was him, so she gave it to him. He thanked her and ate it and felt a whole lot better. And that gave him the strength to do his last thing, to realize enlightenment. But something about just backing off from that striving. You know, I've got to do it, I've got to do it. You know, just taking a little breath, just backing off. Sometimes the door opens inwards. And I just thought it's really nice to remember that, that actually it was when he just stopped that striving for something. Is it like about a me? You know, I've got to be enlightened. It's kind of misses the point a little bit. Anyway, in one description, Bhikkhu Nanamoli, about the Buddha's enlightenment, he talks about going through deeper and deeper states of meditation, the jhanas, which we don't practice, but in some traditions they do. And as the Buddha comes to each one, he says, but I allowed no such pleasure as arose in me to gain power over my mind. He was not going to get stuck with any state of mind, no matter how pleasant it may have been. He knew he had to keep going. He was not done. And this is a very important thing for us. You're not done. You have some lovely state of mind. You know, you can think, oh, great, this is wonderful, I'm enlightened, but actually, you're probably not. And then he saw all his former lives, and he saw how suffering arises and how it can end. He saw the Four Noble Truths. And in each case, he says, ignorance was banished and true knowledge arose, but I allowed no such pleasant feeling as arose in me to gain power over my mind. Even the wonderful teachings he received, he thought, I'm not going to get stuck here, I'm going to keep going. So then he formulated the teaching of dependent origination, which I won't go into, how birth and death and craving and suffering arise and how they can cease. And the Noble Eightfold Path that shows the way to the end of suffering, all of these, his basic teachings. And he says, I didn't make this up by myself. I found the path, the Noble Eightfold Path, that was traveled by people in ancient times. He doesn't take sole credit for it. I'm the Buddha. I discovered this thing all by myself and nobody's ever seen it before. He said, no, I just found a path that people of former times had found, you know. Which is also, hopefully, is just not sort of being a big me that knows everything all of a sudden by himself. Well, an interesting aspect to all of this is that the Buddha paid much more attention to the wisdom, what he was learning, than he did to those blissful states of mind. He saw that they could just be a trap of a lovely, blissful state of mind, and you can get stuck with it. And he didn't want to do that. He wanted to keep going, keep on moving. What do I need to learn here? You know, the Four Noble Truths, the Noble Eightfold Path, the teaching of dependent origination. That's what he was interested in, because that was the answer to his question. Why is there suffering? And how can we be free from it? That's what he wanted to know. Blissful states, fine, but this is what he wanted to know. And those are his basic teachings, and everything else comes out of them. Well, after his enlightenment, he sat in meditation, he walked around, he'd go sit under the Bodhi tree, and then after a week he sat under another tree, and then after a week he sat, you know, he moved around a bit, and he'd sit and he'd contemplate what he'd learned, and kind of formulated his teaching. And other devas and other beings would come and talk to him. And he talked about, to one of them, he talked about the various sorts of happiness. And he said, but to be rid of the conceit, I am. This is the greatest happiness of all. To be rid of, to be let go of that self, that selfish, you know, perception that everything's about me. Being a separate self that's more important than anything else. That was the greatest happiness of all, to see that. And it's not a blissful state, it's a learning thing. You know, it's not about me. It's not about me. It's not about us. This is a wonderful teaching for all of us. It's not about me. And he says, absolutely sure and mindful, I have attained enlightenment. Then right away, Mara shows up. Mara is often personified as a malevolent being determined to defeat the Buddha. But also, he's also been seen as someone who helped the Buddha, to help him get through things. And he can be seen as negative thoughts that come up in the Buddha's mind. I tend to think of him that way. That's a sort of thought of self, or something that comes up in his mind. What about this? I don't know. And now Mara says, you've given up the ascetic path that leads people to purity. You're not pure, but you think you are. You're not pure at all. Well, you can see how this thought could arise in the mind of the Buddha. There he is, supremely enlightened. Maybe I'm just deluding myself and I'm not enlightened at all. You know, it's a good sort of human thought to have, and not a bad one, actually. But then he recognizes this, the Mara, the evil one. He sees what's going on in his mind. And he just says, those ascetic practices are completely useless. He would know. He almost killed himself for doing them. He'd almost died. And he knew that they didn't lead anywhere, they didn't help. And he says, it's because I've developed virtue, concentration, and understanding that I've reached enlightenment, and you, Mara, have been defeated. Then Mara knows, the Blessed One knows me, and he vanishes at once. He creeps away defeated, because the Buddha recognizes him. He knows what's going on in his mind. And this is a lesson for us. When we see what's going on in our mind, it loses most of its power over us. If we're getting angry and we see that, oh, I'm getting angry here, I better be careful, then it loses a lot of its power. It's not nearly so convincing as when we're completely caught up in some self-righteous rage, you know, and we don't see what's going on. And over again, Mara shows up, and each time the Buddha recognizes him, he recognizes what's going on, and Mara vanishes at once. That thought of self or whatever it is goes at once, if you want to see it that way. Another time, Mara's always, he keeps showing up, he never gives up. Another time after his enlightenment, shortly after, Mara says to him, you could be a great king and do a lot of, look what you could do. Here you are, you're the Buddha, you're wise, you're enlightened. Look how much you could help people. Why don't you go back to your family and inherit the throne? Wouldn't that be good? But of course, this would be a thing, a person could easily think, you've abandoned your family and all that and you've got to be a monk and lived a hard life. Oh, you could just come back, you know. The thought might have crossed his mind, and he said, no, I'm not going to do that. You know? He's not just living in bliss all the time. He has these things arise. Mara keeps showing up, and he keeps having to deal with these things. And another time, during this time, the Buddha thinks, I need someone to venerate and obey. You can't be happy without that. But who could I venerate? I don't see anybody more enlightened than myself. I don't think this is a self thing. He doesn't see anybody who knows more than he does. But then he says, but I could venerate the Dharma that I've discovered and respect it. And Brahma sees what the Buddha's thinking and he says to him, yes, that's just what the former Buddhas did also. They also venerated the Dharma and respected that. Good choice. So the Buddha knows he needs to have something or someone to venerate and bow to. And this is really important for us. No matter what, we need to have something that's bigger than us that we can respect. As long as bowing lasts, Buddhism will last. Even when we're a Buddha, we need to respect something bigger than ourselves. It's not all about us and our great attainment. There's something bigger that I'm part of. I'll bow to that. Then the Buddha thinks, it was really hard for me to discover this truth. It was really hard. It almost killed me. And people nowadays are obsessed with their attachments. This sounds familiar. And it'll be extremely hard for them. They won't understand it. I don't think I'll try teaching. I think it's just too hard. You know, they're not going to get it. Then Brahma sees this. He thinks, uh-oh, that won't do. You know, the world really needs the Buddha. Or the world will be utterly lost. So he comes and he begs the Buddha, in particular, in a formal way, kneels before the Buddha and makes gesture and says, please, teach people. Don't fall for that one. Teach people. They need the help. Some people will understand it. And the Buddha sees this and he relents because of his compassion. He realizes they will actually help beings. He says, okay, I'll teach. And he says also, well, it's only because he knew it was going to be hard. He didn't want to do it. He's happy. He's willing to do it. He knows it's going to be hard. So even after his enlightenment, he can have thoughts like this, like, oh, just too hard. I don't want to do it. You know, you can see how that could come up for a person rather than spend the 45 years teaching people. And it was hard. It was hard, you know. But he didn't give in to those thoughts. He'd have these thoughts arise. He wouldn't give in to them. Or it could be Mara showing up. But still, you know, it keeps happening. Again, Mara, are you pining for wealth? Have you done some crime? Why do you have no friends? Why doesn't anybody care? I mean, like you. You must be doing something wrong. Or, don't bother trying to teach people. Just follow your path alone. Well, he's heard that one and he said no. And the Buddha answers him and he goes away defeated because the Buddha recognizes him. Ah, the Blessed One knows me. And he goes away. Well, then, sometime later, Mara sends his daughters. This is some years later after the Buddha's enlightenment, it would seem. Mara's daughters are craving, boredom, and lust. And they try to entice the Buddha, but he disregards them and they give up. So craving, boredom, and lust could still come up even after those 8 years, and he just let them go. He didn't have to feel bad about it. Oh my goodness, I'm having a lascivious thought. He just let them go right by, as far as we know. Yes, he didn't have to worry about it. But they tried. And Mara scolds his daughter, saying, you fools, you've completely blown it. And all of this shows that the Buddha still had problems, even after his enlightenment. He was still a human being. And yes, teaching often was troublesome for him. He was right. He had people try to ruin his reputation, people try to harm him, people arguing with him or showing him disrespect. One time they had no food and they were eating horse food, you know. But they accepted horse food. That was all they had because the people were starving. He had to make rules for the monks because people do really dumb things. He said, I can't believe they did that. Okay, I had to make a rule about it. You know, 250 rules he ended up with. And sometimes he had to change a rule because it wouldn't work. Or people didn't, you know, the lay people would not like, he had to make it so that people would be easier to take care of. Monks would be easier to take care of. And they weren't just being a pain to the lay people. So sometimes he'd make a rule and it would be really difficult for the lay people because they were feeding the monks. And so he'd have to change something. So it wasn't like it all came out perfect right from the get-go. So he'd have to change things. Sometimes he made a mistake. After his enlightenment, he's just been enlightened and is going to Benares to start teaching. Radiant, you know. And he meets somebody on the road. And this person says, whoa, you look great. Who's your teacher? You know, what have you done? And the Buddha says, I have no teacher. I've realized enlightenment by myself. You know, the guy says, okay, thank you, takes another road. Because he said, you never know, somebody might say, I'm fully enlightened. Well, they could actually be the Buddha, but probably not. Yeah. And this guy just thought, I don't want to deal with this. He just, you know. So he went another. So he probably thought, well, that didn't work. I better try something a bit different, you know. One time he came back from a retreat and wondered why there were so few monks. And they said, oh, a whole bunch of them committed suicide. They heard about the joys of nirvana. They decided to go there. And they thought, oh dear, you know, I'm sure that was a horrible blow to have that happen. He had to learn from his mistakes. I'm not trying to paint him as a sort of dodo or someone who wasn't the Buddha, but, you know, he may not have been perfect in everything right away. He had to keep training. He had to keep learning. And that's what I'm getting at. He had to keep on doing his practice, you know. And he knew he was fallible. He was the Buddha, but he wasn't infallible. And not knowing that there isn't a real self, he didn't get all puffed up about, here I am the Buddha, I know everything. Didn't do that. He was willing to learn. He kept learning all his life. So having a deep spiritual experience or deep wisdom, or even being a Buddha, it doesn't mean we don't need to keep up our training. We do. We need to still keep doing it. Our karma can still work upon us. Our selfishness can still come up. And the Buddha always kept up his training. He always wore his robes. He always carried his begging bowl. He lived on alms for all his life. Did his meditation practice, and he taught anybody who wanted to hear. People who would come, even people who were coming to argue with him, he would try to help them, and often he did. Sometimes it didn't work, and he let them go. Even on his deathbed, he was teaching his monks how to live their life well. Endless training, endless kindness, endless selfless practice. Great Master Dogen said over and over again, training and enlightenment are one. You don't get enlightened and that's it. You don't need to train anymore. It's not like that. He said, when someone has an incomplete knowledge of the truth, he feels that he already knows enough. And when he has understood the truth fully, he feels sure that something is lacking. Because if we think we know everything, we probably don't. And even the Buddha had to keep training and learning. And if we understand the truth fully, we don't become complacent because we've understood better than that. We know there isn't a real self to get all puffed up about. We know there's always more to do. We know we can always learn more. The Buddha was a human being, like us. He kept up his training to the end of his life because he knew he had to keep doing it. He couldn't just sit back and be complacent. He had to keep doing his training. He had to keep learning and doing his best to help people. And it wasn't just for himself. He did it for everybody. It wasn't a self thing. Because it was from the get-go. He saw suffering. It wasn't just, oh, I just want to find the end of suffering for myself. I want to find ending of suffering for everybody. Right from the start, he wanted to help other beings. It wasn't just for himself. He could have just kept his enlightenment for himself. He was tempted, it looks like, but he didn't. He had compassion for the suffering of the world. So for us, we keep on doing our training. We keep on meditating and keeping to the precepts as best we can, letting go of our self-partiality. I'm the center of the universe, and my life and my desires and my concerns are the most important thing. Our self-centered view, which is the cause of all our problems. Not striving to get something, like the Buddha, he stopped striving. Not striving to get something from me, but letting go, opening up to truth. Yes, we do our practice because we want to know the truth. But this striving for something from me is not the way. Just letting go of our opinions and views and how it should be and helping other beings. It may not look like a whole lot, but it's the way to peace and it helps us and it helps the world. So that's the Buddha's teaching for us today. Thank you, and may you all have a happy Enlightenment Day, New Year, and everything.